Today on The Balanced Word, discover how to handle the disappointments of life.
Let's face it. So often, life can be disappointing. Even the things that you really wanted when you get them, you find out, not exactly what I thought. You get to a point in your life where either you say, I am never going to get what I thought I was going to get, or you say, I got what I wanted, and it's a letdown. And for most of us in life, what starts as a tree so often ends as a stump.
Wake up my soul, wake up early in the day, wake up my hand, and the instrument I play, wake up my voice, let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
Discovering balanced living through the Word of God, this is The Balanced Word. We'll turn things over to Dave Rolfe in a moment, who today resumes his fascinating look at the Bible stories. Maybe you've noticed life doesn't always turn out the way we had hoped or dreamed. At times we're left disappointed. Well, the prophet Isaiah certainly knew what it was like to experience pain, failure, and disappointment, and God would let him know right from the beginning of his ministry it would be this way. Let's turn to Isaiah chapter 6 and see what this Bible story conveys to us.
Isaiah 6. We're going through the whole Old Testament this year and picking out certain key Bible stories. Isaiah 6 is the story of how Isaiah was called into the ministry, how God told him, I want you to be a great prophet. Isaiah was an amazing prophet, to my mind, certainly one of the greatest, I think probably the greatest. The book of Isaiah, boy, that 53rd chapter, we will look at it in a couple of weeks, is to me the greatest chapter in the entire Bible that Isaiah wrote. But chapter 6 is where God first approached him and said, I want you to be a prophet. And so let's take a look at that story. He says in verse 1 of chapter 6, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord. Now, King Uzziah was a king in Judah who started out pretty good. He was actually quite successful until he got strong. And like so many people, couldn't handle success. And the success ultimately ended up destroying him. He defiled the temple and he ended up dying with leprosy. Well, he was the king when Isaiah was growing up. So he said, when Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting on a throne. He has this vision, or he actually saw God sitting on a throne, and it's pretty amazing. High and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above it stood seraphim, these angel-type characters. Each one had six wings. With two he covered his face, with two he covered his feet, and with two he flew. And one cried to another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the posts of the door were shaken by the voice of him who cried out, and the house was filled with smoke. So I said, Woe is me, I'm in trouble, for I am undone. Because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. I'm in trouble. Then one of the seraphim flew to me, having in his hand a live coal, which he had taken with the tongs from the altar. And he touched my mouth with it and said, Behold, this has touched your lips. Your iniquity is taken away and your sin purged. Also, I heard the voice of the Lord saying, Whom shall I send and who will go for us? Then I said, Here am I, send me. Now we'll stop there for a minute. What an experience. Gee, I mean, you're just going through life and boom, you see heaven. You don't know what's happening with the nation. Uzziah had gone downhill. You were losing all hope. And now you see God on his throne, just with this incredible scene with these seraphim flying around and with all these wings, and they're singing praise songs, holy, holy, holy. And then you feel like, oh man, I'm not holy. And then the angel comes and goes, no, you are too. And he touched him with this coal and he goes, you're forgiven, you're clean. And he's looking, and then God says, Who am I going to send? Who can do my work? And before he could even stop himself, he goes, oh, I will, send me. Awesome. I mean, what a great start to a ministry, right? You're just a regular guy going along. Next thing you know, you see God, you're hearing holy, 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 and your sins are forgiven, and God has chosen you. You've got an important role to play as the prophet to the nation of Judah. And so that sounds pretty good, and really most sermons that are preached on Isaiah 6 kind of stop here. They either go with the, well, once Uzziah died, I saw the Lord, and there's an angle that people play with that, you know, it's only when the king dies that you could really see the Lord. In this case, it was a pretty bad king by that point, so I really kind of question that. The other one is, wow, God, look how holy he is. Or another good sermon is, you know, here am I, send me, that commitment. So lots of good sermons have been preached from this chapter, but very seldom do they go on to say what God then said to Isaiah once he volunteered. But it's actually more the point than all of these other great sermons that have gone before it. So look what God said. After I said, here am I, send me, he said, go and tell this people, keep on hearing, but do not understand. Keep on seeing, but do not perceive. Don't get it. Make the heart of this people dull and their ears heavy, and shut their eyes, lest they see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their heart and return and be healed. So God says, okay, here's your message. You're going to talk to these people and they're going to totally not get it. Everything that you say is going to go in one ear and out the other. What you do will not work. These people are stupid. And you're just going to make them look stupid by noticing that they don't get what you're saying. And so Isaiah asks an honest question. Well, Lord, how long? I mean, how long is it going to take before they get it? And God answered, until the cities are laid waste and without inhabitant. The houses are without a man. The land is utterly desolate. The Lord has removed men far away, and the forsaken places are many in the midst of the land. But yet a tenth will be in it and will return and be for consuming. As a terebinth tree or as an oak whose stump remains when it is cut down, so the holy seed shall be its stump. What? Yeah. Oh, yeah, God, you're so holy, you're so great, I've been forgiven, I want to work for you, here am I, send me. And he goes, good. So you're going to go, and it'll start looking good for a while, a big tree's going to grow up, but then most of it's going to die, and there's just going to be a stump there, and that's going to be the holy seed. No matter what you do, all that's going to be left is a stump. Congratulations. You wanted to go? That's what it's going to look like. How depressing. I mean, to go from this heavenly scene where it's like, whoa, it's all this glory and all this wonder and amazement, and I'm having a conversation with God, and he's saying, you're the guy. I'm going to use you to represent me. And then he goes, okay, but I just want to let you know, nobody's going to get it. They're just going to stare at you and look right through you. And ultimately, everything that you do is going to amount to a little stump. There'll be a big tree so that you get all excited, and it's just going to be a stump. And that's your thing. That's your deal. Poor Isaiah. I mean, that was pretty much the story of his life. Even at the apex of his career, when there was a king, Hezekiah, who was the fourth king in his lifetime, in his ministry. And this king was actually pretty good. I mean, he brought a lot of reforms to the land and everything. And Isaiah was a good friend of Hezekiah's. When the country was in trouble, like when Sennacherib, the Assyrian, was coming down to try to attack the southern kingdom, attack Judah, he calls for Isaiah, and they're kneeling down and praying together over this. Can you imagine a national leader who has somebody who will come in and pray with them like that? I mean, that's probably where Isaiah thought, yes, this is awesome. I get to see God work. But Hezekiah, towards the end of his life, God had Isaiah tell him, okay, buddy, it's time for you to die. And Hezekiah's like crying and turned his back to him and put his face to the wall. And no, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. And begging for his life. And finally, and by the way, you don't ever want to talk God into something, because sometimes he'll just give it to you just to show you why he didn't want to do it. But God goes, okay, fine. You can live another 15 years. But Isaiah watched what happened in those 15 years, those extra bonus years, the overtime. And it was during this time that some guys came down from Babylon, and Hezekiah showed them everything, took him into the bank vaults, took him into the Lord's house, showed him all the gold. Like, look how rich I am. Look at all this stuff. It's what ultimately caused Babylon to come down and conquer the southern kingdom, destroy the temple, and take everybody off into captivity. He very foolishly did this. And when Isaiah said to him, what did you show those guys from Babylon? And he goes, everything. And Isaiah's just like, geez, what a stump. He doesn't get it any more than anybody else ever got it. I'm ministering to idiots. And then it ends up, Hezekiah also has one more son. His name is Manasseh, who became the most evil king in the history of Israel. All that happened during overtime. And that's Isaiah's life. It really did. It looked so promising at one point. It looked like, wow, what a tree. And in the end, it was just a stump. And God let him know that right from the beginning. So he was prepared for it. One good thing that came from that is that Isaiah understood failure. Isaiah understood pain, disappointment. And as a result, it was only in Isaiah's accounting of the Messiah that you have that amazing 53rd chapter of Isaiah. Everybody else who's writing about the Messiah is talking about him on a throne, ruling, conquering, killing. Isaiah writes about the one of whom he says, you'd never believe it. He grew up like a plant out of the ground. He had no form or comeliness. He wasn't really good looking. When you see him, there's nothing that you would desire in him. In fact, he will be despised and rejected of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, and you're going to turn your face away from him. But it took a guy like Isaiah to be able to see the most important time that Messiah would ever experience, the time when, as a humble man coming to earth and living a life of pain. And for Jesus too, ultimately, what started out as a big tree. I mean, hey, when he was born, the angels are showing up singing in the clouds to shepherds. Wise men come in on their camels to give him presents. And as he started his ministry, thousands of people surrounding him. Here, you want some bread? You want some fish? And like, oh, it was awesome. But in the end, he ended up dying, nailed to a stump, with most of his followers gone. A handful, two or three maybe, there hanging out at the cross. One of his 12 disciples had completely betrayed him. His most promising student had denied him. Isaiah could relate, because the way that Jesus lived his life, as Isaiah had predicted it, was the same kind of life that Isaiah himself lived. So much promise. And yet ending there in this humble, you know, just stump. Now, God prepared Isaiah for that. But I think many of us aren't so prepared for that. And here's the deal. I don't care how much optimism you have, how much hope you have. Isn't life so often a lot like this? Where You're starting out, you have big dreams, big hopes, big plans. Oh man, I just know it's going to be great. You know, you're a little kid and you're thinking, I'm going to be the president of the United States. You get older, you're like, no, thank you. But I wouldn't want that job. But you might have big dreams, but how does it turn out? Let's face it. So often, life can be disappointing. Even the things that you really wanted, when you get them, you find out, not exactly what I thought. You get to a point in your life where either you say, I am never going to get what I thought I was going to get, or you say, I got what I wanted, and it's a letdown. And for most of us in life, what starts as a tree so often ends as a stump. And I'm sorry to, you know, bum you out like that, but that's just life, let's face it. And let's think about almost every area of life that's that way. Your professional life. Maybe some of you are at a point where you are at the peak of your profession. You are getting what you've always wanted, and it's everything that you always thought it would be. Just wait. Because it has a way of coming unraveled. And many of you have already known this, where everything you worked for, it either didn't happen or it happened, and now it's gone. Because promises so often result in failure and disappointment. You know, there, for many of you, your economic situation has been that way. There was a time when it was looking good and you felt wealthy. You were kind of on top of the world. I mean, you're a homeowner and you thought that was good until the housing market crashed. You had a job where your job was being a computer guy with those punch cards. You know, and now like 5-year-old kids know more about computers than you do. And you're like, well, I can't believe, you know, this happened. It just happens. It's kind of a lot of times the way life is. If you're married or you've ever been married, before you get married, you have this fantasy that, wow, getting married is just going to be unbelievable. It's really all I want in life, to be married. And you think you know what marriage is like. But if you've been married for a while, or especially if you've been married more than twice, because usually the first marriage, you kind of blame the spouse and you're like, no, I'm going to marry somebody else next time. And then that doesn't work so well either. And you go, whatever happened to those ideas I had of just, you know, we're going to be together forever, the two of us just going through life and not caring about anything but each other. And I can just see us laying on a beach on an island in Mexico in our little chairs, watching the sun go down, drinking our Mexican beer like on the commercials. And it's like, oh yeah, that's what it's going to. And then you get married, you find out it's hard and it's, you know, it's challenging and it almost never is what you thought it was going to be. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm so blessed to be married and I have an amazing wife, but marriage, in the ways in which it's great, I never would have known. And in ways that I thought it might have been, it kind of wasn't after a while. And it's like, wow, I had this tree idea, and now it's like this precious little stump. You know, if you have kids, you know how this works. I mean, that perfect little child. And it's like, oh, it's going to be like, it's my little soulmate. It's my mini me. And then they grow up and they have ideas of their own. And you have dreams for them because your kid's going to have everything you didn't have. And you know what you want them to be. And, you know, and you're like, they're going to be so successful. They're going to have everything I want. All my life is devoted to them. So you're like forcing them to do their homework when they hate to. But you're just loving them so much. You suffocate them. You spoil them rotten. And they come home with, like, you know, their hair dyed black and all this makeup on, tattoos. And like, they just want to sit around and play games on their computer. And you're like, what happened to my little baby? How does this happen? It can be so disappointing. Because you don't get to plan the way it goes, and it doesn't turn out the way you think it will. Then you learn to love what it turns out to be. And you have to do that with every area of life, or you will be hopelessly depressed and miserable. But at some point, no matter what area of life, if you're going to experience all that life has for you, you're going to have to accept the fact that sometimes it looks more like a stump than a tree, but that's your stump. That's, as he says here, the holy seed shall be its stump. So looking forward, do you set yourself up for failure by imagining this awesome life that you've designed for yourself, only to find out that it's not going to be what you thought it was going to be, and now you just feel let down? You can blame other people for it, or you can blame yourself, or you can blame God. But the truth is, it usually doesn't turn out like what you think it will. This is just the way it goes. Everything in life is that way. You've probably had friends that you thought, we are best friends forever. And then they burn you, or they leave you, or they get mad at you. And you're like, some friend you turned out to be. And you don't lose friends. You just find out who your friends really are. But it's painful when you find out, oh, they weren't really a friend like I thought they were. It's like you, and you go from like, together we can conquer the world, to where it's like, hey, where are you? I'm stuck. I'm on my own. And that's kind of the way Isaiah's life sort of went. And God told him in advance. Now, again, this might seem horribly pessimistic to you. And if you're really young and you still haven't figured out that most of your dreams are stupid, I don't want to bum you out. If you want, you can just go, yeah, you know, Dave had jet lag, and I'm sure he must have been horribly depressed the way he was dying. I hope, just hope he doesn't kill himself, you know. And if that's what works for you, okay. But I feel fine about this. I really do. Because wisdom is to realize that actually most things that I plan in life aren't going to happen. And if they do, they're not going to be what I thought they were going to be. And I would rather be prepared like Isaiah was and just go, okay, I get it. Sometimes it looks like a tree and sometimes it looks like a stump, but that's my stump. And that's worth it. Once you figure out that what is left is worth it, as Isaiah had to have, then you're ready to live life.
You're listening to The Balanced Word. In addition to being our teacher on the program, Dave Rolfe is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com. Or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Story series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. And we'd like to take this time to invite you to Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our Sunday morning service times are at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Again, we're at ccpacifichills.org if you'd like more information. Or if you're outside of the area, you can watch our live stream right there at ccpacifichills.org. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. With this final point of application, here again is Pastor Dave.
For all of us, we have that question. And the question is, can you handle the truth, or do you want to live your life with delusions and then a consequent disappointment when it doesn't turn out the way that you think it did? But see, here's another thing. You really have to ask yourself, is the stump worth it? one of my professors in seminary, who was just a really special man, greatest in my mind Old Testament scholar of all times, Charles Feinberg. He's long gone to be with the Lord. But one time when I was young and I was getting frustrated with ministry, I went to him and told him, you know, I'm just really frustrated. And he took me to this passage. And he said, he went through it, and then he goes, David, you just need to understand this. You're not ministering for the tree. You're ministering for the stump. And I'm okay with that. Because ultimately, I just know that's how life is.
We'll continue Dave Rolfe's study, Working the Stump, next time on The Balanced Word. We'll see you back here after the weekend. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo.
Wake up, my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands. And yeah.